and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Because look, the reality is no one could look at those pictures. No one could see those images and not be moved by it. Again, the thought is, if that's going to be our foreign policy, if every horrible image is going to bring a military response, look out, because there's a lot of atrocities around the world. And maybe this is just, we as Americans, maybe waking up to the reality that there's a lot of tragedy in the world and there's a lot of horrible people in horrible places. I got to wonder, if this is the new, if this is the Trump doctrine, it's something I think that maybe Congress should get itself into. So here to talk a little bit about, what we've seen, what we know, what we don't, and how we deal with it, I've asked our good friend Propane Jane for our weekly dose of sanity. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So I look at this weekend, and I can't tell you how many conversations I had with people who are really torn, because you see those images on TV and you just feel that something has to be done. And I don't know how many people are agreeing with what Trump did. I guess we'll find that in the polling in the days ahead. But, the feeling that something has to be done.
Yeah. I have that feeling as well. And it's also very interesting because this has been going on for years now, right? And President Obama, wanted to intervene in similar ways back in 2012 and 2013, and got such vehement pushback from the Republican Party, and they wouldn't even authorize the strikes at that time. So, these images have been coming across the wire for years now. And so it's quite interesting that now all of a sudden Trump wants to do something. I found it really interesting on Twitter. People are the internet never forgets, and people are sort of retweeting all of the comments that he made back then. It's interesting because he's done a complete 180 in terms of his position on intervening in Syria, and it's quite precarious that now all of a sudden he wants to do something and he didn't so many years ago.
Right, and that's why what I wanted to talk about, because look, you, as I've said, I don't know what the Trump doctrine is going to be. It appears whimsical, it appears incoherent, it appears slight based, and whatever he sees on TV. And that's kind of a scary prospect if that's going to be our foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. And, I remember Thursday night I was watching MSNBC, and they had, just like sort of the breaking news going across the chyron at the bottom. And the quote from Trump was, "Something needs to happen, just something." And you sort of get the sense that he felt like everybody was looking to him to do something, and he wasn't necessarily exactly sure what he needed to do, but that he needed to demonstrate some show of force to reassert himself as, this leader that can be powerful and take charge when people demand it. But there really doesn't seem to be much forethought or even a plan going forward. Even the strike itself, I'm still struggling to figure out what they actually accomplished, because they're still launching, bombs from the very same airfields that we allegedly took out.
Yeah.
And so I think this is more of just, if you think about the schoolyard bully, somebody saying something to that bully that all of a sudden now he needs to put up or shut up, and do something. And what's going to come of that is basically, just sort of this arrogant, aggressive, attack. But I don't necessarily see that it has any real, implications for protecting the people of Syria or getting Assad out of power.
Yeah. One of the funny cartoons I saw over the weekend was a cartoon of Putin and Assad, and Putin on the phone going, "America wants to bomb. What time's good for you?" And you know, it's just kind of because evidently we let everybody know, hey, we're gonna have a fireworks display.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, a lot of the commentary coming out of this is, you know, how much of this was wrapped up in Trump trying to extricate himself from these allegations of collusion with Russia, and how does this strike sort of factor into, you know, the treason investigation? And, you know, up until this point, we were talking about all of these cabinet members that have been in contact with Russia. We were talking about Flynn. We were talking about Sessions. We were talking about Jared Kushner. And now all of a sudden, you know, that's pushed to the, you know, page six, or it's completely off of the radar now. Yep. And now suddenly we're talking about that Trump is trying to get tough with Russia, but it doesn't necessarily make sense if he, you know, he communicated with Russia about the strike before he told Congress that he was going to go forward this way. So it still raises a lot of questions about their relationship and what these, you know, sort of diplomatic, there doesn't seem to be a diplomatic process happening. It just seems to be, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, shoot first, ask questions later. And I do think that he's doing that to appear powerful. I think, you know, he feels weakened in a lot of ways. And I also think that Putin and Assad are exploiting that aspect. And I think that they know that Trump is very self-conscious about his approval ratings. He's very self-conscious about the treason investigation. And so in some ways, I feel like he's being goaded. I think a lot about, you know, if you think back to 2001 and Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, much of their strategy was meant to provoke. A lot of these terrorist attacks and things that they were doing were meant to bring America to a point where we had no other choice but to bog ourselves down in this quagmire of military intervention. And I think that Putin, in a lot of ways, is just sort of drawing from that same playbook and exploiting the inadequacies that Trump feels internally to get him to do something very rash that ultimately, you know, results in us extending a lot of our military resources and you know, our focus internationally on this war that may or may not be something that's quote-unquote winnable.
And that's the thing. I mean, the country is in the midst of a civil war. Where do you find the – where do you go? Which – or do you fight both sides? Do you take them all out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it, again, it's very similar to the Iraq War. And you know, we involved ourselves in this, you know, sectarian conflict and didn't necessarily understand what was going on both sides of you know, the struggle. And in some ways, you know, I think that, again, it's playing out now. I mean, obviously, you see ISIS is running rampant. And in some ways, we're trying to, you know, like Tillerson is saying that we're still relying upon the Syrian regime to fight ISIS. So it's like, who's our enemy and who's our friend? And it's so confused at this point, that I think that ultimately is the goal, is to just be, chaotic, and to get us wrapped up in something that we really can't get ourselves out of.
Yeah. And in that chaotic mindset, I mean, because, you know, I fear that the president, you know, the new Trump doctrine, as I said, is one of, you know, being whimsical or chaotic or, or really incoherent, if you will. You know, how do we, you know, because look, I think a lot of us want to be the ones who stop all of the injustice around the world. And look, if that's the new doctrine, if we're going to be fighting wars all around the world to stop bad things from happening, maybe it's a conversation we should have. But, you know, how do you think average everyday people should or are dealing with that kind of a reality?
I think this is probably the perennial struggle of humanity, that there is always war. There is always conflict. And I think the question for America, you know, as a superpower has always been, how much do we involve ourselves in what's going on around the world? And do we have the resources to put ourselves in these conflicts abroad when we have our own, you know, issues domestically. You know, we're on the one hand, we're being told we don't have enough money for universal health care. We're being told we don't have enough money to adequately fund our public education system. But then at the same time, we can just, you know, in the blink of an eye, blow 80 million, you know, however many millions of dollars on these Tomahawk missiles.
Yeah, I think it was $87 million on the fireworks display Thursday night.
Exactly. And then ultimately, you know, Trump holds stock in Raytheon, the company that is, making these missiles. And so, it has so many shades of like Dick Cheney and Halliburton and this military-industrial complex. And you start to wonder, you know, are we doing this for humanitarian purposes, or are we doing this for, you know, sort of the economic boom that comes from waging endless war?
Right.
And how many, you know, defense contractors are getting rich? And then also, when you think about the oil and sort of the, you know, the plunder of war, and what is our interest in Syria? I mean, yes, we certainly are worried about people being killed, but there are people being killed all over the world. And how do we decide, you know, that we're going to go to this particular area? And in a lot of ways, I mean, even Trump uttered out of his mouth, I mean, he tweeted it a couple of years ago that we should be in Syria for the oil. And when you think about the Keystone Pipeline and you think about Russia, you think about Exxon and Tillerson, a lot of it, you know, I'm curious about the motives because it's not just to save people. If it was to save people, why aren't we changing our position on the refugees? Why aren't we welcoming them in if we're going to, you know, start bombing their country? And we know that there are all these people that are displaced and these children that are being gassed, et cetera. Why isn't our diplomatic stance changing at all? Why is it just a militaristic strategy?
Right. And, you know, why is it when you looked at his budget that he cut foreign aid, which would do more than dropping bombs?
Exactly. And just this idea that you also have to have a functioning State Department. You know, I mean, in some ways, I think that the discrepancy in terms of like the Obama strategy towards Syria and even Hillary Clinton's strategy towards Syria was that, you know, you kind of have to balance this like carrots and sticks, right? I mean, there is a place for military intervention, but then there's also the need to deliver some type of humanitarian aid and to actually pick up the pieces where you're basically, you know, leveling whole areas. So I don't necessarily think that Trump has thought all of this through. And even in terms of his State Department, I mean, they have so many positions that haven't even been filled.
Point.
So all of the pieces of the puzzle aren't necessarily fit together. And even when you think about like the sanctions against Russia, Trump never really voiced much support for the sanctions. And now there's sort of this question of is Russia going to somehow use this as a means to have those sanctions lifted under the guise of, you know, now suddenly we need you to do this so that we can actually help you. You know, they're sort of it's like extortion in some ways. You know, do this for us and then we'll try to, you know, mediate between America and Syria. And I don't necessarily think it's going to work out the way people think that it is or hope that it is.
And because I look at this and again, I go back to, you know, President Trump's, you know, response sniping from the sidelines, you know, over the last several years over this issue. And again, you know, you go back to this mindset that, you know, you can just on the dime stop and completely change, do a 180 about face because you saw pictures and, you know, because you saw those same pictures then. In fact, if you remember, the attack back then was much, much worse than this
Absolutely.
One was. And yet I remember at the time going, if you can look at those images and say those kind of things, you know, that's troubling. But now, I mean, I go back to this, and maybe I'm hung up on the complete about face on ideology, and I guess I'm just hung up on that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if, I don't know if you ever read Sun Tzu's Art of War, but there are a lot of elements that are rooted in psychology when you think about international relations and diplomacy. The same things we have observed about Trump in terms of him being very thin-skinned and very erratic and quick to jump to conclusions and quick to take action when he hasn't necessarily thought things through. It isn't just us that know that. I mean, you know, Russia knows that. North Korea knows that. China knows that. All of these world leaders are looking at him like, hey, this is somebody who we can, you know, he's easily baited, like Hillary Clinton said. And so I think that as things are going along, much of this is rooted in his emotional, you know, back and forth and how he's feeling about his image as president and whether or not he looks strong. And unfortunately, our society seems to sort of reward war, right? I mean, you know, we'll have to see, like you said, as to whether or not his approval rating actually jumps in response to what's happened with this strike. But what we know even about George Bush, if you, again, look back to 2001 and 2003, all of a sudden after 9/11, right, it galvanized public support, and his approval at that point was probably the highest that it was over the course of his 8 years. And so in a lot of ways, I think that, unfortunately, our society views war and military intervention as a sign of strength and power. And we don't necessarily think about what the implications are for the long term. And ultimately, you know, even though there was so much goodwill for George Bush in the beginning when he started the war, by the end of his term, you know, that was one of the main reasons why people elected Barack Obama, was because, you know, his stance was that he was against, you know, waging the Iraq war, and that his goal was to get us out of that conflict.
Yeah, we were fatigued, absolutely. I mean, but here's the thing. Yeah. I mean, I think when we got into Iraq the first time, everyone thought it was going to be, you know, a storm in Norman going in and 2 week, you know, little vacation in the sand, and it would be over and done with in no time at all. I don't know that we as a country have the stomach for long, protracted wars. We like blowing stuff up real quick. We like it on the evening news, how we won. But when it gets drawn out and you start seeing our soldiers coming home in boxes, I don't know that we have got the stomach for that long term.
Right. And even if you think about Vietnam and just, you know, in recent history, you know, I think that there's sort of this fantasy and this idea that, you know, we sort of think about like World War II and all of these allied forces, and it's very, you know, patriotic and jingoistic, and you think about all these people that came together to liberate all of these people who, you know, this genocide that was happening. And so we see that aspect of it, but we don't necessarily look at the aftermath, like you said, and people coming home in boxes, or, you know, for instance, our veterans that still don't have adequate funding for their health care. You know, we don't necessarily plan for all of the eventualities. And I think, again, when you have somebody like Trump, who in a lot of ways is taking these actions to sort of bolster his own image and his own approval rating, as opposed to really, you know, organizing a long-term diplomatic strategy for dealing with these nations, I think that's where the danger is, because there doesn't seem to be. I mean, this is like what we're saying is like the first 3 months, right? And we're already in a very big international conflict, and potentially, you know, signing ourselves up for more. I mean, they're moving ships over into Korea, and now North Korea is, you know, sort of testing the limits. And so there's a lot of bravado, I think, that is happening between all of these leaders. All of these authoritarian leaders are trying to outdo each other. And ultimately, when that happens, nothing good really comes of it, you know, except for destruction. You know,
I go back to George Carlin and his bigger manhood theory of war. Uh-huh. Want their manhood is bigger? Bomb them with our large, you know, our large things.
And the idea of like, okay, we're going to sit down and we're actually going to hash out our differences and see how we can come together in ways for peace. That doesn't really happen. I mean, ultimately, you know, it's all about attitude. It's all about a big show of force. And I don't necessarily think that that the American people really, like you said, have the stomach for what's going to happen in the coming months and years.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Jen. I mean, the reality is war is very profitable. There's not much there's not much money in your peace thing. And in fact, you could go back, you know, almost 100 years now, 80 years at least. Smedley Butler wrote the pamphlet "War is a Racket," where he looked at World War One and said, "These are the people who made all the money. These are the you had all these young people who were killed, and you know all the suffering that went on. But these are the people who cashed in and hugely, and they do look. You know, that's what war is about. It's about the money.
Yes, it is, and unfortunately. You know, again, the people who are waging these wars, they're not sending their children off to war. You know, they're sending, you know, the people who voted for them, unfortunately, out to fight these wars. And again, I just don't think that you know, after all of this conflict that we've been involved in over the last decade, that Americans really have the stomach, you know. And even I think the other aspect of it is that Trump's campaign was also built in some isolationist rhetoric.
Absolutely.
America first, and we need to take care of, you know, we need to make America great again, and we need to focus on our own country. And again, you know, that's what his voters, you know, presumably wanted, and then now all of a sudden he's going the opposite direction. And you know, are they going to go along with him? Are they suddenly now going to get on board just because, you know, he says so? And are they going to be able to see that they're the ones who are going to actually be, if we do put troops on the ground, that they're the ones that are going to be going off to fight this war? And I've seen a lot of veterans online that are like, hey, you know, we have no interest in going over there. And how can we solve this problem without actually, you know, extending ourselves in a military intervention that has no end in sight?
No, you're absolutely right. You look at a lot of those, especially the rural voters who, you know, you're talking about boots on the ground. Those are their kids' feet in those boots on that ground.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's terrifying because not only are, you know, domestically are they getting, you know, massacred in terms of their Social Security, their Medicare, their Obamacare, their jobs. Now you add on this war. And again, I think, you know, when you look at Republican administrations, war in a lot of ways is being used as a boon to the economy, as opposed to sort of creating jobs, you know, here domestically. The way that they're boosting the economy is by building more war machines and using our military industrial complex to make a profit, sadly.
Disaster capitalism works.
Absolutely.
And by the way, we get to decrease some of the surplus population, you know, those poor people.
Right, which is ultimately very sad. And I think, again, you know, as I always say, again, at the micro level, this is how people solve their conflicts. I mean, you know, when you look at all of this gun violence and how individuals see themselves as, you know, you can't take my guns away.
My cold, dead hands!
Right, exactly. There's this idea that, you know, all you need is a weapon, and all you need to resolve your conflict is aggression and this bravado. And actually, you know, that's just not how it works. I mean, most of us don't really respond well to violence. I mean, certainly you can be fearful and you can sort of be submissive and cower down, But that doesn't really earn respect. It just earns fear. But I do think, unfortunately, that a lot of these voters, that is how they function in their own personal lives. Yeah. And so when they see someone like Trump or George W. Bush being very bellicose internationally, they welcome that because they mistakenly see that as a show of power as opposed to a sign of weakness.
And we've got interesting days ahead. If in fact we're going to be going around the world and being the world's policeman. Jane, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing your thoughts, and, well, helping us along.
Absolutely, and have a great week. I'll see you later.
Always great talk. Thanks so much, Jane. If you want to check out her stuff, we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com of how you can check out our good friend, Propane Jane. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.